Hey, I'm Eric Torenbrook. Welcome to another episode of Maker Stories, where we explore what makes the makers, what drives them, what they're scared of, how they make sense of the world, and everything in between. This week's episode is with Gary Vaynerchuk, and it is a great one. How do you even describe Gary V? Well, Gary is an entrepreneur, an investor, a best-selling author, and really just a force of nature. This episode, we talk about his new book, Ask Gary V. We talk about how he became an investor, what it's like starting a company with his brother, the role ego plays in his life, his famous jam sessions with Chris Sacca, Travis Kalanick, Ashton Kutcher, and much, much more. Definitely order Gary V's new book, Ask Gary V. Gary has been a friend, supporter, and a great investor to Product Hunt. All right, here's Gary. Gary, what's up, man?
Hi, brother. How are you?
Good. Perfect. Thank you for joining Product Hunt Live. I know we got 30 minutes, so let's get right into it.
Let's do it.
Okay, Gary, let's start with the book. Why, Ask Gary V, why this book? Why now?
Mainly because I want to change my speaking career into basically Q&A town halls. And so I set up on a journey 18 months ago to build my brand around the Q&A format. That was in reaction to, I think, people really liking me at Q&A. It's where I separated myself. You know, Eric, not a lot of people are in the jam sessions that you get to come to at South By, where people really get to see the depth of my knowledge. And so I think Q&A was where I was able to do that. And I thought it was a good place to organize my brand around. So I started a show. The show went really well. And the book then was an opportunity for me to take it to the next level. And so now I think after this book comes out, I've already seen an uptick in my viewership on the show. And I'm excited about having my brand be kind of situated in the Q&A space.
Now, we were talking this past weekend about attention. And you are so fascinated with attention. You have been for so long. Why is that? What does that mean to you? And what do people not really understand about attention?
Well, it's what's going on right now, right, Eric? I mean, we're basically doing a radio show from 20 years ago with a little bit of video here. You know, I just don't think there's anything besides attention. Attention is the thing, right? It's the one thing that you have to amass before you tell anybody to vote for you, to buy your sneakers, to sign up for Product Hunt, to buy wine, to buy the book. And once you have that attention, the creative is the variable, right? What you say matters. But so many people talk and think about saying things and what matters without realizing that they don't have the attention first, they're dead. And so people get caught up in dumb shit like impressions or, you know, general awareness without understanding is there a depth of that intention, impression. Like, I know that I can't quantify against impressions because on Twitter, I'm getting enormous amounts of impressions, but I know people aren't consuming it. On Snapchat, I have a lot less, but I'm getting people to do things like I did with early Twitter. So attention to me is the asset. It's humans' number one thing, right? It's the most valuable thing. And so that's why I'm obsessed with it. I don't think you can win. Look, even think about Product Hunt. Think about why influencers were so important. It's how you guys built. The digital influencers really gave it a lot of dApps, and that they all have attention, and that created a little bit of smoke, and then you get media outlets to pay attention, and that creates smoke. And so to me, whether it's PR, influencer marketing, Google AdWords, Facebook ads, doing a live stream right now, Periscope, Snapchat, we're all fighting for one thing, attention. And then what you do with it becomes the variable of your success. But I'm obsessed with it because it starts there. You know, like right. I can give the greatest keynote. It's the greatest content of all time, but nobody heard it. And so that's the key.
And tell us about the moment when you fell in love with Snapchat, when you realized that this is the next sort of, you know, attention gathering.
To me, it was when I started noticing two things. One, it climbing on the charts on the iTunes. And two, when I started seeing normal people at airports that were very young, clicking a yellow button over and over and doing things, and I realized it was Snapchat. And that was probably summer of 13. where that kind of really, I mean, knew about it from 2011 or 12 or 12, I think. And then summer of 13 is when it really caught my attention. I've been watching it very carefully. And then last summer is when, you know, August is when I got really serious. I'm like, holy crap, it's really happening. And then, you know, obviously the DJ Khaled thing happened in November and December. And I was like, of course.
What does that mean to you?
Same thing that happened with Ashton and Twitter. Like, there's a moment where, like, you can see it bubbling up. It's bigger than people realize. And then somebody with already a mainstream audience of some level jumps, grabs it, is the right personality for it. And then everybody just starts paying attention. And so it's like a piece of paper on a smithering fire, right? Like, it's smoldering, like, it's happening. And then that person's that piece of paper and that starts the fire. So it made a lot of sense to me. You know, I'm not mainstream enough yet to, like, I'm not a mainstream, like, I can't do it. Like, a social media person can't do it. It has to be somebody from, they live on television or radio or print, at least for now, that's still the way it plays out.
At the peak of his attention, let's say he came to you Gary Vee, and said, how do I optimize, you know, capitalize on this attention? What should I do? And he's asking you for advice. He could do, you know, tons of different things, from like books to startups to products to, you know, what do you advise him, what he should do to capitalize?
Try to figure out what he's good at, right? You know, like, you know, I think, again, Ashton actually understands tech. There's been a lot of celebrities that have lost money in betting on bullshit tech, right? You know, like, what is he good at? And I think what he's good at is creating content. And so to me, sponsored deals from brands is a big play. I think he should invest and get access to, you know, some deals. It's a lottery ticket. You might get the next product, you might get the next Snapchat, you might get the next Uber. But I think all of the above, I think there's a million ways to monetize. I think the first thing you do is you monetize what you actually do. He's getting paid a lot more money to DJ every night than he was 4 months ago, right? And so, you know, I think brand deals is going to be a big one for him. That's what I believe he should be doing. And so that's, you know, I think it's different for everybody. It depends on your skill set.
You decided you wanted to get into tech investing. You wanted to, you know, write books. Like, what was that process like for you? And what were some other things you tried?
Well, I don't, you know, up until I was 32, I just ran one business and I was super quiet. And, you know, I think when Google bought YouTube for $2 billion, $1.6 billion, and I was right about another thing, I was like, all right, this talent is bigger than just selling wine. I've been right about every consumer trend in the last 7-8 years. I need to go out and make money. I should be an investor. And so my path to that investment was, it was when it clicked that I was smarter than maybe I even realized. And so I started talking about it. So I started making videos about it. I started giving keynotes. A keynote led to a book. That book went very viral. And then I started becoming friends with all the Web 2.0 guys, and opportunities came to invest. So it just kind of came natural to me, but it mainly happened when I realized I had something.
You not being mainstream enough, even as a sort of, you know, big online celebrity and successful in various milieus, have you thought, you know, sort of made a decision at one point to, you have to make your work more accessible to a broader audience? Or how have you sort of made that, you know, tension or balance there?
Good question. I decided that I won't adjust anything. I have to be me. That's my biggest thing, right? So that's that. And then as far as, like, you know, should I do television or other things, I've just tried to, you know, right now I'm actively running a business. I just can't do a television show while being the CEO of a 650 person firm. Even this book tour takes me away from the business more than I'd like. And I've been in this hotel room since I just flew from Sydney, Australia to Cleveland, Ohio, you know? And when I land, I'm like been dealing with fires and, you know, and all sorts of like business stuff. So I just can't do a TV show yet or ever, maybe. By the time maybe I'm ready, there'll be Netflix, there'll be Over the Top, there'll be all these other stuff, you know?
Well, let me ask you about your work relationship with your brother. How do you guys compliment each other?
You know, I think AJ's, you know, first of all, he compliments me by not wanting the same things that I want. He's very behind the scenes. He doesn't want to be out there. That's super important. So we have different wants and needs. That's big. He compliments me in that he's very detail oriented. I don't have to worry about a lot of the financial stuff because I know he's got it. And I think that's super important for me in running a business. So he's a great note taker. He's very type A, right? He's quite organized, and I'm more vision and energy and branding. And we overlap, right? Like, I don't think people, you know, a lot of times, you know, our friends try to like say things like, oh, AJ's really running it. And I laugh. I'm like, don't forget, I built a $65 million business while he was in high school. Like, you know, I overlap 80%, and he's more magic than people realize. We just know that we can both stay in our lanes and do our thing.
He's been starting businesses ever since he was at BU.
Yeah, I mean, even further back to that, when AJ was 12, we've been flipping stuff on eBay. So, you know, I've been teaching AJ entrepreneurial ways from the get. That's what an older brother does. And so it's been a lot of fun.
You know, one of your ideas of legacy is that you want everyone you meet to show up at your funeral. And when I take that, you want to have, you know, a profound impact on the people that you touch. Now, you have so many people who love you, you know, so many friends, so many fans. What about people who don't? You know, there are obviously going to be haters out there, people who say, you know, who knew you at the beginning and say Gary sold out or perceive something as inauthentic. What do you say to those people? Not that you have to say anything, but how do you sort of think about that? Does it get to you?
Yeah, it gets to me a lot. You know, like, I like being liked, you know, and not everybody's like that, but I am. I really like being liked, and I like people. And look, man, it's just a constant game. You know, I think there's a couple different things. First, everything that you do is being documented. So I know how I've interacted with you as an investor. I know how I've interacted with you as a young buck. And so when you're, and I know that you're out and about, especially because of Product Hunt. So, you know, I'm sure there's been dinners where there's people that don't know me or only met me for 4 minutes at Summit at Sea or backstage or tried to get my attention while I was at South By, but I was pulled in 800 different directions. And they'll say, ah, Gary, whatever, he's full of shit. And then like, and then that moment comes where either you tell them the truth or not. And I know that not everybody, like, I've even done that. I haven't stepped up for everybody every time always. So, but I just think it's a net game. Eventually it comes out to be true, right? Like that's it. It just eventually comes out to be true. Like, I want to convince everybody I'm a good guy and I'm not, but I also am empathetic. I know that most people consume me when I'm in my most competitive, when I'm giving an interview, when I'm on stage, when I'm in public. You know, I'm competitive. And even when I'm around talented people, again, you and I mainly get to spend time at South by Southwest and jam session that now Sokka and Travis have made famous by talking about it. And so, you know, I get competitive there too, as you know, but you also get to see a different side of me. And so, like, you know, it is what it is. I really want to be liked. I want to do the right thing. And I'll say this, Eric, I definitely think I'm in a better place with how people view me today than 24 months ago. And so that makes me feel good, right? Like, I've built another big business, which gives me more chops. I created the Ask Gary Vee show, which I think has shed a good light on me. I think a lot of people in this chat even have started liking me more since Ask Gary Vee because it's shown a lot more of me. So I think, you know, I think it's just, I deal with it with empathy and understanding. I prefer to be liked more than I am right now. You know, I'll just keep chipping away at it.
Go play in your work. Does it fuel you? How do you not let it get the best of you? Because you want to be the best, but you don't want pride to get in the way.
I like my ego. You know, I like being competitive. This is business. Like, this is not you know, Fluff City USA. This is goddamn business. Everybody's trying to win. You know, I want to win. And I love my ego. I love it a lot because it makes me feel good about myself and I want to feel good. And I don't think I'm better than anybody. You know, I really don't, Eric. I really don't. But I equally think I'm the best and I'm pulling at these two opposite ends. And that's why I actually think that I am really pulling harder in a paradox contradiction way than most people, which is why I get big reaction. I think that I'm wired. My DNA is in a situation where I'm pulling very heavily on ego and humility in a way that some people think I'm outrageously humble and some people think I'm massively egotistical. And it makes sense to me because I recognize both of them exist within me. I also think that I'm in a great place because I'm balanced out of my extremities pulling in opposite directions. I massively care what everybody thinks about me. And I mean everybody. I mean, even, you know, Vicky and right now Fitch and George B. Thomas saying Daily V made him, like, I care about these things. On the flip side, it is stunning how much I don't give a shit about what anybody thinks. You know, like, it's just insane. It's insane that when Lyftcoms says, you know, but ego isn't self-love, I'm like, ooh, maybe she's right. I don't want to let her down. I want her to think I'm smart. But at the same token, like you've seen it in action when the smartest people in tech are like, you're wrong, Gary, I'll punch them in their face, you know? So like.
And I've also seen you, you know, at times admit, say, oh, actually I am wrong. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I think people don't like, what people get from me in public is my full thoughts baked. I stay in a very hardcore lane, right? Like I don't try to guess. So you've seen me in settings where we're debating the things. Like, just for everybody, I've been referring to a lot. We do this thing called the jam session. A bunch of smart people get into a room and we just sit there for 7-8 hours debating Snapchat and Bitcoin and Musical.ly and should Google buy Facebook and Twitter, should Google buy Twitter and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And Eric, as a young buck, got invited to some of those, and I can tell you it was fun to watch. It's always fun to see the youngsters come for the first time because you literally walk, I mean, depending on the room you're in, sometimes literally 7 to 8 of the 12 biggest names in tech are sitting in the room.
It's incredible.
And so I remember, like, it's just super like, whoa. And it's really hard to say anything. And I kind of was part of the founding team of it, and I usually orchestrate it. And yeah, when we're talking about things I don't know, Eric, you hear me like, say Aaron Battalion from a technical standpoint, teach me, right? Or Ferris when he's going in his way up thinking, I'm like, all right, LSD is good? Okay, I didn't know. Like, you know, like whatever it may be, like I think that people bring different values as the same way that everybody gets quiet in the room when we talk about marketing and I kind of take the mic. The reason people don't see me, my humility in public when I'm on is I'm only talking about the things I know best. Too many people are jumping into conversations and into panels and replying to people's comments about things and writing mediums about shit they don't know.
Let's talk about the jam session for a second. I want to take a couple of individual members over the years, and I want you to say something about them, obviously without, you know, while respecting their privacy, something that the public maybe doesn't appreciate about them and how smart they are, how impressive they are. Let's bring Ashton first. What can you say about Ashton that the public maybe doesn't appreciate as much?
He's on the highest of levels of thinkers and investors and understanders of tech, and there's no way that anybody watching right now would believe that because he's Ashton Kutcher. But he's one of the deeper, knowledgeable people about everything that's going on as if he was a full-time VC, and he's massively impressive.
How about Tim Ferriss?
You know, Tim is one of the people that brings me the most value in the world because his brain's in a totally different place than where my brain's at. Like, from a life hacking standpoint, from an efficiency standpoint, I really enjoy my time with Tim. He's also, I would say one thing that I don't think people understand about Tim is he's awfully kind. Like, he's a very good guy. Like, a very good guy. Like, really nice, actually. So I think kindness is probably underrated. And I think that people do know this about him. He's very thoughtful and is thinking about different things. And I like him a lot.
It was Chris Sacca. It was Travis. I mean, it was a bunch of these guys. Did you know back then that they would become what they became?
You know, I don't think that I realized, you know, 5 years ago that Sacca and Travis would become multi billionaires. Kevin Systrom, billionaire, you know, Tony Hsieh, Drew House, you know, all these guys. You know, I think I knew that this was the next tier of leaders. I knew this was the next tier of leaders. I think everybody got to the financial place quicker than I anticipated.
What was he like in those early jam sessions?
You know, Travis is one of my best friends during that time. You know, he's the only person I shouted out and crush it. And, you know, I think that Travis and I are kind of similar in some ways. Travis is very competitive, very competitive. And I think it's manifested itself in people. You know, I think that if I was the CEO of Uber, I would take a lot of flack too because of my competitiveness. And so I think that, you know, the narrative around him, I think, is stunningly unfair. He's got a big heart, but he's outrageously competitive. You know, I think Sacca is really fun for me because a lot of people underestimated him. I think a lot of people really underestimated him early on. And I think that, he was brilliant. He architected his position in Twitter, buying secondary in a way that most people weren't thinking about. And he created a new way of making money. He's also an unbelievable investor. I mean, we're talking about, Uber and Twitter and Instagram. I mean, this guy is a beast. I think he also comes across with a lot of ego and bravado. He rubs people the wrong way. But I just think that he's an unbelievable family man. He loves his girls in a way that's intense. And I respect his family dynamics quite a bit, actually.
I have a couple more questions. One, when you think of the term success, who and what success means to you, who most strongly comes to
me, because I live every day of my life doing what I want to do. And I think that there's a lot of other people that are that too. And I'm sure if I knew any other person that does that every day, every second, then I think they're tied with me. But I will never complain, Eric. And you know me a little bit, like my complaining is non-existent because I've made my bed and I sleep in it. And I just love being able to, because it's an incredible feeling, whether you've got $4 or $4 billion, whether you get to spend all your time with your family or none, being able to do what you do at all times when you want to do it is a gift and a half.
You know, we just bought a few copies of the book for the office. We are super excited about it. Why should people hear, why should they buy this book?
So the one thing that I think, there's a lot of different reasons people should buy the book, in my opinion. Number one, the far majority of people, if they're watching right now, should buy the book because I brought them value before the book came out, right? I think that's huge. I think bringing value before a book comes out is huge. So I think that's number one. Number two, I think it's my best book because I think it's my best book of the moment. I think Thank You Economy will be my favorite book always because I think it's my deepest philosophy. And so I think that could be the best book, but the response has been overwhelming. Like, forget about what I think. The audience's response has been overwhelming, right? Like, I mean, from people that love me, it's been funny. My homies have been like, yo. Like Ashton was like, yo, man, this is a really good book. And I was like, whoa, you're saying that like you didn't think I could write a good book. Like, so that pissed me off. And then very honestly, back to the aforementioned, not haters, but like people that don't love me as much, I've gotten hundreds of emails already in the first week. Hey man, I had to read this because I cover it for Elite Daily or for HuffPo or for New York Times. And I don't really like you. like I thought you were a dick, and I gotta be honest with you, this book is really good. So I've been getting really strong feedback, the best feedback that I've ever gotten for a book, even more than Crush It, because I went both Crush It and Jab Jab. It's got something for everybody. It's got the rah-rah, philosophical, heady, and motivational stuff, and it's got very practical shit. And I think that's helped me.
Ask Gary Vee, I'll put the link in the show notes and on Product Hunt as well. Okay, we have five more minutes. Neve asks, why isn't Shots more popular?
I just think it's attention space, right? Like, I like Shots. I like John Shandy a lot, by the way. I think he's a real hustler. I just think that, look, between Snapchat and Instagram, there's only so much room, and it hasn't been able to carve out its spot yet. I just think it's just true supply and demand of attention issues.
The angle is makes it like more, actually takes it away from the product a little bit. Or what do you think of that sort of approach?
What I'm referring to everybody is that Bieber's behind it, and had a lot of celebrity friends on it early on. I think at times people look at it cynically, the way they look at Ashton, right? They don't believe that he could be good. So at times, but I think a great product will always be a great product. It didn't hold Jessica Alba's company back.
Blab's potential.
This is my first time on Blab. As some of you have heard, I've made the joke that I haven't gone on it because I just thought it was funny, like just not being on it because there's so many things to be on. I like what I'm seeing so far. It's a little buggy in a couple places, but I like the UI. I've got to play with it on my cell phone. I'm not ready to make a judgment. I'm 30 seconds in or 25 minutes into it, but it's beta. I know a lot of people love it. as you can see by the audience. I mean, look, people are gonna love access and engagement with people. This is, you know, Yahoo Live did this, you know, 9 years ago, 7 years ago, me and Kevin Rose used to do this. It's all about access. You know, that's why people like it. Sure, you can put four people on a screen. I think that's a feature that anybody can add. So I don't think it's enough to, you know, do it, but I'm excited for its potential. I love live video. And I love that a lot of people love it. And I'm excited to, once I'm out of this coma, to make it one of the things that I look a little bit harder at. And when I say coma, I mean my book tour.
Okay, we have two last questions that go perfectly together. Jeff wants to know, what advice do you give, and I know you give this, you know, in the book often, but what advice do you give to a 23-year-old recent college graduate from, you know, a very good school, let's say, you know, University of Virginia or something, that wants to get into, you know, wants to get into tech?
Self-awareness and patience, you know, just good old-fashioned stuff. I think that's the key. And so you got to know yourself. I think this question always makes me laugh because I have no regrets. I've done everything the way I've wanted to do it. But if I knew today, I would tell them to buy Google stock and Facebook stock. Like would I really tell them? If I knew what I knew today, I would tell them everything that happened in the world. I would tell them to date girls that became famous. I would tell him before they became famous. I would tell him to buy Google stock. I would tell him to become friends with Elon Musk. I would tell him to things so everybody thought he was a prophet. I mean, like, if I really, really was to do it, I would do that. As far as if I didn't have that path, then I would just say to him, you know, man, listen, you're gonna be right. So, but I had utmost confidence to begin with. I didn't need my future. As a matter of fact, if my 40-year-old self came to my 25-year-old self and said, you're going to be right, I'd probably been like, fuck you, 40-year-old dude. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. Get out of here. Like that's just the way it is.
That's funny. On a related note, last question. You are all about hustle and agency and opportunity. Let's just say a 25-year-old who has no college education.
I would say to that, I would hire that kid. We hire plenty of kids that don't have education or go to crap schools. I'm a crap school kid. I don't think a good degree is the prerequisite to entrepreneurship or the things that I need. So that's that.